It looks like there are some new people, new in Buddhism, I think. And in case they may be wondering why cranky people in the wetsuit doing here in sort of supposedly Buddhist teachings. I think we will have to do a bit of an introduction. So, a short introduction to Buddhism first, and then we talk about gurus, disciples, relationship. You will have to help me, because I am not, although you might think that I am the guru, I am also a student, actually a student of many teachers. So I can speak about myself, and you can speak about yourself, I think. Your experience. We can turn it into some kind of a therapy stuff. What do you think? Maybe you should buy and get some tissues. Lots of tissues from tomorrow. But first, a short introduction on Buddhism. Actually, Buddhism is not that attractive. Most of us, I think, we just are paying karmic debt. If you really think about it, think deeply, it's not really attractive. It doesn't emphasize in songs and dance. As I've been speaking, the quintessence of Buddhism is doing nothing. And it is good for nothing. So it's not really attractive. Tabameva. What is it? In the Heart Sutra it says. We should read Heart Sutra tomorrow. Tomorrow is a special Buddhist day. So we'll begin with the Heart Sutra if people have copies of Heart Sutra. What does it say? It says what? Nothing to gain, nothing to lose, no increasing, no decreasing. Not only it's not attractive, many times it's very chaotic. There's no sort of ultimate, unchangeable guidelines. That makes Buddhism so difficult to comprehend also. Another thing is, and that actually makes the Buddhist path extremely liberal, and that's not so good. No one wants to be that free. We, we consider ourselves people who love, like individual rights and liberal liberty and all that. But deep down, we like a little bit of order. We love our dictators. And that's what we are going to talk, right? From tomorrow, dictators, gurus. So absolute liberation, absolute liberal, absolute free freedom. No, it's not that attractive. If you really think carefully. No promises, no virgins waiting when you die, both boys and girls. And that's so boring. Enlightenment, the Buddhist talk, is again not attractive enough. This is why I don't see Buddhism flourishing really on a grand scale. It never has, actually, from the beginning. Maybe during the Ashoka's, Mauryan's kings, there were more than, it was the height of Buddhist sort of prosperity. But even during those days, I think Buddhism was still a minority. Sometimes I wish I can reform Buddhism. Would be really, really lucrative for me. To make it very simple, four times of prayers a day, as a Buddhist must visit to Bodh Gaya once in a lifetime. No chickens for Buddhist. Buddhist men must wear socks. That would really bring so many into Buddhism. So simple. But that is not the case. So this is why it needs a little bit of introduction, I think. It's complicated, very complicated. This is why we have so many complicated people, like myself, like people in the wetsuit. Well, I think we can, when we talk about Buddhism, we cannot escape from the idea of Buddha. So let's begin with that, Buddha. What is Buddha? Unfortunately, this Buddha, the term Buddha, unfortunately has been sort of monopolized by a being or being, beings. It's a little unfortunate. because Buddha, because that makes people think, oh, Buddhist, follower of the Buddha, that Buddha. Someone from India, a prince, who, if you are sort of more sympathetic to Buddhists, you can say a prince who renounced his luxury and in search for truth. But if you are a little critical about Buddhism, prince who was too afraid of taking care of his family. He couldn't handle his family anymore. Dysfunctional family. He had to get out. I heard people do talk like that. People do talk like that. Quite interesting. Very interesting. For a Buddhist, hearing this is very interesting. People think he's a product of a kind of a dysfunctional family. You know? Very interesting. Anyway, you are referring to a person, a being. And that's a little unfortunate. Because actually, Buddha is a state. Well, let's put it even more simple language. Buddha is actually a wealth. It's a property. It's like a inheritance that all of us are entitled to claim for. You have to hire the lawyer and you have to do you have all the right. There is really good paper. You know, really good evidence that you can actually claim that property, that wealth, that inheritance. So Buddha is actually not a being. Buddha is a state. It's a quality. We are talking about a quality. See, I was telling you, Buddhism is very complicated. So Buddha is a state, it's a quality, it is something that we can all have it, or you can call it however you like. You can have it, you can discover it, you can claim it, you can actualize it. And that is Buddha, and it's quite an important attribute or aspect in Buddhism, this Buddha. Maybe a little bit more. So what is this Buddha? What is this inheritance? What is this property that we are talking here? We are talking about our nature. Inherent nature. Let me put it very simply. When you don't have that wealth, when you cannot, what do you call it, when you cannot use this wealth, you become nervous. That's the sort of main downfall of not knowing, not being able to use this belt. Nervousness. Yes, let's talk about nervousness a little bit. Buddhists call it ignorance, but it's actually nervousness. This nervous quality that we have comes from not knowing what you are doing or not knowing who you are. And in the process of not knowing who you are and what you are doing, somehow you have to make up a substitute of who you are and what you are doing. And so we have all kinds of labels. But something tells you that that's not real you. Not only something, a lot of things tells you, consciously or unconsciously, obviously or unobviously, tells you that you are not that. I mean, think. Think about ourselves. When we say ourselves, we are referring to a form. Okay? One, a very big factor is a form. And our form has been changing a lot. Waist size 34 to 44. That's a big change. Of course, you like to believe that you are the same guy who's become bigger, but something tells you, something makes you sad that it's becoming 44, maybe become, or something makes you uneasy, changing, you understand? Things like that, I'm sure you know. I've known some of you for a long time now, and a lot of things are happening to you and to me. Lot of extra forms occurring. Change of color, change of shape is happening. And that is making us think. That is making us nervous all the time, isn't it? I mean, go to a vitamin shops. Everything is to make you not nervous, they say. And in the process of going to this vitamin shops and self-help books, you learn more problems. Instead of solving problems, you get more knowledge about problems that you never knew that you had, now you know. After a visit to a bookshop or a health food shop, you should still eat healthy, though. Yeah, this is the Buddhism. You have to know that you are decaying, you are falling apart, but you should still eat well. This is what I mean by chaotic. Buddhism is very chaotic. You should still eat well. You should still groom yourself very well. You should still, you know, lipsticks, all of this necessary. Necessary. Anyway, what else do we have? Okay, form. Big part of us. And then the feeling. Wow. What more fickle phenomena can you bring than a feeling? It's the most fickle. Now, this is supposedly one big part of you, isn't it? Feeling is, I mean, what you feel is what you are, almost. Everything, the feelings, and even the even the what makes you feel good is not real, it's completely fickle. Such as, to make yourself happy, we listen to sad songs. Now, that is completely absurd, don't you think? Sad songs, to listen to sad songs to make you feel good, to make you feel satisfied. So this, within the sadism and masochism, within the, you know, just so many, you know, different kinds of feeling, changing all the time. What makes you feel good today doesn't make you feel good tomorrow. And this constantly makes you nervous. You have no reference. Today this will make you feel good, but tomorrow it doesn't. So it makes you nervous. Not consciously, not necessarily consciously, but unconsciously somewhere. This nervousness is actually the really... If not for this nervousness, insurance company will bankrupt, you know. The insurance companies, they thrive because of this nervousness. Can you understand? Nervousness is so important for the worldly life. Economy, the world economy. All this is politics. Political system, all of this. So, we are nervous. Based on the form, we are nervous. Based on the feeling, we are nervous. Then what do we have? We have action, our action. That is again changing all the time. Our action, our manifestation. From a small action, such as folding underwears, to big actions such as participating a marathon, is it? Marathon. Or from a seemingly wholesome action such as looking at a Byron Bay sunset, to going to Kathmandu and looking at prayer flags. So many actions that we engage. But we get bored with many of these actions. Many of the new actions we have to apply, we do, doesn't make us secure. Nervous is still there. So, what do we have now? Okay, form, feeling, action, perception. That, of course, I don't have to explain so much. It's changing all the time. What you perceive someone as the most beautiful being, next day you think him or her as evil. All this. Now see, so all this makes you nervous. Fundamentally you are so nervous. And why? Because there is a... underneath there is a poverty. Because you haven't claimed your inheritance, the Buddha. How does this Buddha look like? this inheritance, this. Here again, unfortunately, so many bronze and so many clay statues of the Buddhas and paintings have spoilt us a little bit. Because we have made the form of the Buddha limited. Limited form. Can you hear? Just to remind you, I'm introducing Buddha, okay? Because I have to introduce you Buddhism. And generally, Buddhism is the wisdom of the Buddha, teachings taught by the Buddha. So, the Buddha's teaching. As soon as we say that, we are conditioned to think about follower of a man who came to this earth 2500 years ago. Which is right. It's not wrong. But what I want to introduce you is we have to go slightly more than that. Okay, let me introduce the Dharma in within this context because I think it will be easier. Even the Buddha's deeds, I'm talking about historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, Siddhartha, Prince Siddhartha, the son of Suddhodana and Mahamaya, the nephew of Prajapati, husband of Yashodhara, one who was not born in Australia, but who was born in Lumbini 2500 years ago, not recently. Okay? A person. When he was dwelling in the palace, okay, just if we depict some of his life. One day he wanted to go outside the palace to explore, and he saw death, old age, sickness, and he was very puzzled and asked his driver, chariot driver, what are those? Because he has never seen those. He was in the palace, surrounded by beautiful courtesans, ponds, bathrooms, royal luxuries. And the chariot driver said, these are, you know, old age, sickness and all that, explained. And he asked, this is going to come to me also? Then he said, yes, unfortunately, death, old age, sickness comes to everyone. A very beautiful story. But so much teachings there. Again here, we are talking about us, actually. We are talking about someone. We all live in our own palace. We might not have 60,000 courtesans, but we do have few. We have our own bathroom. He had 60,000 courtesans, 500 elephants, stuff like that. We have like our Holden, isn't it? Holden? Holden? Yeah. And we do go out. Or maybe not. That's something to ponder. We are reluctant to go out of nest. Maybe that's it. Some of us, we are forced to go out because there's too much flooding inside. And when we do actually go out, we don't see, even though the death and the old age and sickness are very obvious, right in front of you, we don't see them. And if we do see them, we don't ask our chariot driver, what's wrong? Okay, I'll do it, don't worry. You know, we don't ask these questions. Oh, every day there's a death. No need to go out. You look at your own hand, your own face in the mirror. It's happening. It's very much happening. It's like a close-up shot. It's very much happening, but we don't ask. Is this old age? Is this sickness? Is it going to come to me? Is it happening to me? And finally, even if some of us are brave enough to ask and get some answer, intellectual level, of course, we are not brave enough to get out of it and search for the solution. Okay? What happened to Prince Siddhartha? He went out and he just, one night he took off. He then went to six years of penance. Actually, some of us, we do. Some of us, we go to, we sort of temporarily we get hit by some very pathetic form of renunciation. And we go. And, like the Siddhartha, we go to penance. You know, spiritual path. Give up this, give up that. But, like the Siddhartha, you know, he didn't get stuck with that path. The path, extreme path. He said, this is not good. Extreme path is not good. So he went beyond this extreme path and he was completely free. Not only free from the palace life, but he was free from the ascetic life. Most of us, first of all, to get out of the palace is difficult. Very difficult. Some of us, we manage to, and then we get stuck with the ascetic life. And then we pride ourselves for being a holy person because you are a follower of an extreme ascetic religious, morally sound and ethically sound path. And then what did he do? The story goes on, huh? He went then to Bodh Gaya, complete freedom. And then what did he say? He said, I found the source of the freedom, but nobody is going to listen to this. Nobody will understand. So true. Very true. Because this is my assumption, okay? I think that the fact, when he said, okay, I found that path to the liberation, but nobody is going to believe in this, nobody is going to understand this, so I might as well shut up. At that point, the story goes that Lord Brahma and Indra came and requested him to teach. My assumption is this. The reason why he said, nobody is going to understand this, nobody is going to believe in this, is because actually, if he was to say this, and if he did say this, I think he would have said, don't do anything. There's no goal, there's no path. See, nobody would understand. Nobody will buy this. Everybody loves path. Even those who says don't follow path, they still love a path. So, what did he do? As a request of the two disciples, Brahma and Indra, he began to give the teachings. And these teachings is called Dharma. That's a second important thing in Buddhism. Buddha and the Dharma. Dharma, okay, at the moment we understand this Dharma as I'm explaining to you, it's actually the method or the path that Buddha taught. That's broadly speaking. But Dharma is much more than that. Dharma is not the words, not only the words and the sentences and, you know, volumes of the Buddhist sutras and shastras that we nowadays consider Dharma as. Of course there are some form of a Dharma, but Dharma is much more than that. Dharma is, I think the best description of the Dharma is Tseme Shivilam, meaning non-violence. The quintessence of the Dharma is no violence. But when we talk about no violence, we are not talking about going to Hyde Park and holding a banner and protest some presidents, or only sticking to Body Shop because it doesn't test with animals. We are not talking about this kind of philanthropic kind of non-violence. That's good. Very good, you should practice this. But Dharma's non-violence goes beyond. I think, this is my assumption, my interpretation. When the masters say Dharma, the quintessence of the Dharma is no violence, basically they are talking about no nervousness, path of no nervousness. See, when you have dualism, when you fall into dualistic distinctions, that is violence. I mean, define violence. What is violence? Violence is an act or something that makes another uncomfortable. dualism, dualistic distinctions does that. So freedom from dualism is the quintessence of non-violence. That is non-violence. And this is what Buddhists are supposed to cultivate, get used to. Of course, we should go and protest the war and all of that, but more than that, we should protest violence of dualism. We should protest nervousness. Every day we should go for a strike of this nervousness that has been tormenting you. Not only 1 year or 2 years, all life. Enough is enough. Hunger strike if it is necessary. That kind of protest. That is non-violence. Non-dualism. And that is not only, that's basically, it is the truth. It is what? Whether Buddha himself said, whether the Buddhas have come or not, whether the Buddhas have taught or not, the truth of the phenomena will never change, has never changed, and is never changing. That truth is the Dharma. Buddha and the Dharma. We all of us here, we have all kinds of nervousness that we have been talking today. Lots of negative emotions, I'm sure. Now, we are told to, okay, as a Buddhist, we should claim our inheritance, which is the Buddha. How do we do that? By slowly getting used to this idea that negative emotions, however they are not our ultimate nature. They are conditioned, they are not real you. But this will take time. This will take time because we have strong habit to think that these are us. So getting used to the idea that I am my nature, my absolute, my true nature is not these dualistic emotions is what we call practicing the Dharma. This is what we call meditation. This is what we call being Buddhist. And someone who does that is called Sangha. So that's it. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. As I told you right from the beginning, it's quite complicated. And within the context of the Sangha, I will now, maybe after a short break, I will explain our main subject. which is about the Guru and the disciples. I have kind of got lazy this time. I know I'm supposed to teach Madhyamika Avataram, but I opted for this one, and it's kind of, I don't have to do so much homework. I can say whatever I sort of comes in my mind. And this kind of title works usually. You know, Madhyamika Avatara, who would come and listen? I was thinking about using something like Guru, Disciple, and the Bliss. But maybe too much. So, yeah, that's it. Before the break, maybe it's about two or three questions about Buddhism, generally, very generally. So please, those who are already matured Buddhist, no need to ask questions. Those who are curious, new listeners, if there's any, if you want to ask a question, one or two questions.
Just please wait until the microphone gives to you before you ask the question.
No, okay. Don't pretend that you are new, huh? Okay.
I was just wondering how getting used to the idea that my negative emotions are not me, or that I'm not my negative emotions, how is that claiming some wealth? What is the wealth there? Like, I can see that we abandon negativity, but what is the...
Because it will make you less nervous slowly. Because it will give you a certain confidence that they are washable. Oh, so many things. Because it will make you, yes, basically have confidence. You understand?
Kind of. But it's still, the confidence is still in terms of the negative emotions. So, like, if there's a mess in my room, I can say, well, this mess in my room is not me. I can potentially remove all of this mess.
No.
But it still doesn't actually say that there's any room there worth having.
Oh, I see. Well, the confidence, when it comes to your room being messy, the fact that the mess is not your room, that's the metaphor, you understand? If your room is the mess, then you have nothing to do, no choice. Then you are stuck. But your room is not the mess, they are two different entities, two different phenomena. So that gives you a confidence to sweep the mess, clean the mess. Something like that.
But it's still not going to necessarily give me a good room. Like, I could still have a really bad room and have a messy room.
Oh, I see. Well, you will have not messy room after cleaning it, isn't it?
I won't have a messy room.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Oh, Not messy is quite good room. You are talking about whether the Buddha is good or bad, basically. That's what you are talking, isn't it? That's quite interesting, because we, as a Buddhist, we love to talk the quality of the Buddha as something good. And it is also necessary when we talk to promote it as something good. But of course, if you really are serious Buddhist, we don't really promote Buddha as something good. We don't say it's bad. It's beyond good and bad. So your room is beyond good room and bad room. Because as long as we talk about good and bad, we are talking within the level of nervousness. Because then there's a nervous, good, hope and fear. Hope to be good and fear of being bad. Okay. That's a very
I'd like to ask regarding your last answer, then how could you teach as you were going to the previous you suggested about the guru, the student, and bliss. Then if the room is beyond being good and bad, then also surely the bliss would be beyond being good and bad, so therefore it wouldn't be bliss.
That is the bliss. That's why they call it Mahasukha, the great bliss.
Could you explain how bliss can be beyond good and bad?
Okay. Do you want to ask?
Yes, I'm very new to it.
Yes.
And my question is, how does the student choose the teacher? Or does the teacher choose the student?
That we are talking for 3 days, I think. Yeah. We will talk about that.
I'm just wondering about the going for refuge, and when I go for refuge to the Buddha, is that thing that I'm going to refuge to that a possibility of cleaning the room?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's it. That's the fundamental idea of refuge. You are... When we say, I take refuge to the Buddha, it means a lot of things. It can mean, I take refuge to that Prince Siddhartha. Okay? But more important is, I take refuge to my Buddha nature. Now to put it in a simple language, when we say, I take refuge to the fact that I am Buddha. How do we again to interpret this? I take refuge to the fact that my room is, what do you call it? Cleanable. I take refuge to the fact that I am washable, purifiable. I am, yeah, that is the fundamental, that's the base of the Buddhist idea of Buddha. That quality, that's what I was saying earlier, it's a state, it's a quality. It's not only a person that came 2500 years ago, we are talking about a quality that you yourself possess, or you are, you have that. Very important. But not so easy, as I was saying right from the beginning. Not easy to comprehend. Much easier to say, yes, you are a bad guy. You are completely a loser. You are useless. Now let me save you. Much easier. You will then with the tears and flowers and incense come to the temple and then I will give you this and that and you will feel, you know, like good. Much easier. But Buddhists think it's a bit of a scam. Buddhists are very arrogant inside, you know, I think.
I have a question now that we're talking about the rooms. What if you are quite comfortable with your messy room?
Oh, we are all. But not, the thing is, there is inherent nervousness. That's the problem.
But is it the ignorance to be happy in your messy room or don't care?
Yeah, okay, let's put this way. If that ignorance, it's very hypothetical, okay? If that ignorance, let's say you are happy with your messy room, right? If that happiness doesn't change at all, then you don't need path. No need path, no need Buddhism, no need any ism. But that means you are already there, actually. But if one has to be careful here, because doesn't mean that just because you are happy with your messy room for about a day or 2 days or a year doesn't mean much. It might be actually you are being disillusioned. It's a big cause for disillusionment. And when you get out of this, you might get hit really violently. So, we don't know. Ignorance is a bliss, is it? That kind of bliss, not a good, not that trustable investment sort of material. Because it could change. And we like to change. We like to. Yes, that's it. Change. Okay. You walk into your room. It's messy. Good. Comfortable. Cozy. You know, your shoes there, your slippers there, toothbrush here, like this. Good. But tomorrow, a little boring. Different kinds of messiness is necessary, isn't it? So, that's already a suffering, according to Buddhism. Because now you are beginning to dislike your earlier comfort, and you are looking for a new comfort. So that's what we are talking here. So, has to be careful. Okay, we take a few minutes break, and then we talk about disciples and teachers.